We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Fitzy joins Dale and Keefe every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on WEEI.
You know, it was obviously a rough 2 months, and it was one of those things I felt like I really wasn't prepared for last year. Felt like it kind of caught me off guard with whether we were going to play, whether we weren't, you know, so I just kind of went back to doing the same thing I always do and staying ready, staying prepared for the whole season, you know, like I usually do. I felt like last year when they shut down spring training, it was one of those things where like, are we going to play? Are we not? Type deal. And, you know, it was my fault. I take accountability for that because I didn't stay ready. I think this year I said to myself, I said, they're not getting me again. So, you know, I stayed ready the whole time.
Fourth and final hour, Dale and Keefe, Sports Radio WEEI. Nick Fitzy Stevens is with us. That's J.D. Martinez speaking yesterday down at JetBlue Park. I mean, I guess the good news is he's acknowledging that he wasn't ready to play. The good news. The bad news is you get paid how many millions of dollars?
20 plus. Yeah,
just to, you know,
it's
sort of be ready to play.
Super embarrassing. Hey, they're not going to sneak a season by me this year.
No, I'm ready. For I'll the be ready this season. Year. Don't you worry.
It's like, rascals. Oh, my God. If anything, they had like more time because the two sides were complaining about money for so long. Remember, it had nothing to do with COVID protocols. It was all about how many games and what percentage they were going to play. But they were going to play. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Most teams went out there and actually played. And guys played well. Former teammate of J.D. Martinez even went on to win a World Series. So they played all of that, and it counted. And J.D., though, was like, hey, fool me once. Shame on you. Fool me twice. He hit .213 last year with a OPS of .680.
Yeesh.
He was awful. But he's got to be better. Because he can't be that bad, can he?
Well, and yet if you go to WEEI.com, even as we speak, there is a piece on there by Rob Bradford, the headline of which is Why It's Not Outrageous to Think J.D. Martinez Can Follow in David Ortiz's Footsteps.
Bradford Show.
What, in which retire?
He actually makes a statistical comparison to similar stages of their careers and makes the case that J.D. Martinez is basically David Ortiz. Now, he does have a bit of a gap there in terms of the so-called clutch factor. Yeah. Which we think is a real thing.
Yeah, but I don't remember David Ortiz having a year like that, do we? When was his 2020 J.D. Martinez season?
He never had it.
Did that ever, like, maybe in Minnesota before he got a good year?
He was still good. He was still a good hitter in Minnesota. It's the greatest regret in the history of that franchise is letting him walk, but he just never was the David Ortiz of the Red Sox.
So
even in his worst season, he never came close.
That's what I'm looking at. So 14 seasons with the Red Sox, his lowest OPS, let's find it, .794 in 2009. That was not a good year for him. 28 dingers and 99 RBI, though, but still, a .794, yep. That was by far the lowest. And what did I just say? J.D. Martinez was like 110 points lower than that. So, yep. I don't know.
Seven home runs in 60 games last year, coming off of 43 just 2 years prior, and being one of the most feared right-handed hitters in the league.
Right.
So what Bradford did was he took a rather arbitrary 4,661 plate appearances, because that's where Martinez is heading into this season.
Okay.
So he just used that as the number, and he looked at Ortiz at the exact same spot, which was on July 18th, 2007. He was 31 at the time when he hit that number of plate appearances. And Ortiz had more home runs, 247 to 238. He had more RBIs, 822 to 738. Martinez has more hits, 1,213 to 1,141. Now, he also is correct to point out, you know, it's what Ortiz did after that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Getting to that point was one thing. After that, you know, he hit another 294 home runs, 946 runs batted in, and a 932 OPS after that. So, you know, Martinez is going to have to do a lot to even approximate.
Is he describing last year as an outlier? Like 2020 was just a bad year, and JD wasn't prepared. He didn't think they were going to play, and he went out and performed like it. Because if you want to say Martinez is 2017, 18, and 19 seasons, like that was – this guy was on a track. Like his year before he got here, his 2 years with the Red Sox, especially his first year with the Red Sox. I mean,
yep.
The guy was top five in the MVP vote, led the league in RBI, had 43 home runs. Did he have the batting crown that year? Or at least he was in the mix for it. Like he was a machine that first year. And then his second year, the numbers were good. They dropped off, but I mean, of course they were going to because they were so good the year prior. But then last year, it was like he and Andrew Benintendi, and I know Benintendi got hurt and barely played, but the two of them couldn't get out of their own way, and they were just they were horrible seasons.
I do think last year was an anomaly for J.D. Martinez. We, you know, the old adage about you are what the back of the baseball card says you are. The back of his baseball card doesn't have a whole lot of those seasons on him. He had a horrible year. Now, whether that was because they snuck a season in on him that he wasn't expecting.
Yeah, he's like, hey, guys, come on. A baseball season?
Whether it was the whole lack of a video component, and there's some form of video that's going to be allowed this year.
The guy loves his video.
Whatever it is.
Could be Cora coming back. Maybe he just loves Alex Cora. Maybe it's going to be less COVID because he seemed to not be so into all of that as well. If you took his stats from last year and you put him out over the course of a whole entire season, he's going to hit like, what is it going to be like? 18 home runs.
Yeah, and 20 home runs.
Like 120 hits, and ugh. That was bad. I mean, it was bad.
I know the nerds don't care about batting average anymore, but he hit 213, like almost 100 points less and 120 points less from his first year. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was nowhere near. But that's one of the things is he was as bad as he was last year, their offense still scored some runs.
Mm-hmm. Which, if he had a normal J.D. Martinez year.
Right. They're scoring runs, and that's why I really do think with – and you're not just solely relying on him because you have Bogarts, Devers, and Verdugo. I think you add in Martinez and what hopefully will be a bounce-back year for him. Mm-hmm. They're going to score runs, and it just gets back to the question we've had in really the last couple of years now is do they get anybody out, or do they just have to outscore teams every single day?
Do you think that the manager has an effect on a team? I mean, the most obvious thing is pitching changes. You know, hey, it's time to bring the lefty in out of the bullpen. That's the primary focus, right?
I mean, I think it
does,
though.
And keeping everybody from killing each other during the course of a long, drawn-out regular season.
Yeah, it's probably, especially because stats are such a huge part of it, and front offices kind of run teams even more than the managers do. It's the least important out of the four major sports. But there is something to it, like – going from Bobby Valentine to John Farrell was a big boost for everybody. But then also going from John Farrell to Alex Cora was a big boost for everybody.
Yep.
And maybe going Cora back from Ron Renicki, maybe that'll help too. I mean, I think the players like him. Xander Bogaerts loves him, and he's your best player. And if that makes him play even just a little bit better, then it's worth it.
Does a manager matter? I mean, how much time did we spend talking about how the Celtics seem to have taken on that sort of like lame-o group hive mind mentality of Brad Stevens, and that seems to be affecting the team negatively. And also,
well, except we just think that a baseball manager means less to a success or failure of a team than an NFL
football coach
or an NBA
coach.
For goodness sakes, yeah, maybe of all four sports, then maybe the Major League Baseball manager has the least impact of the four majors. But nothing J.D. Martinez gave off in press conference, in soundbite, in effort on field last year seemed to indicate that he was in it to win it. That was absolutely...
He acted like he didn't want to play.
I'm surprised he didn't opt out, if that was even an option last year.
Yeah, this is what it looked like for a guy who... This is what it looked like for someone who did opt out but actually played all the games.
Bingo.
That's what it was.
Bingo.
Because there are plenty of guys around the league. Wasn't there a player that just opted out a second straight year? I forget who... I don't know if he's on the Angels. I forget who
read
that story.
Yes, Ian Desmond.
Ian Desmond, good player.
Straight second year.
Second year in a row. He's out. But at least he knows, like, he wouldn't be committed to it, worried about it. So don't go out there and put out a season like that just to collect the checks. Well, I mean, I guess if the check's that big,
big check,
maybe
yeah.
I mean, look, you know, J.D. Martinez, he gets, You know, he's on the front of WEEI.com, front of RedSox.com right now, as J.D. Martinez is back in it to win it this year. He's all in. He shows up to spring training. He wears the drunk Tom Brady T-shirt, so not like, look, he's having fun again.
Which was actually kind of cool. I'll give him that one. I thought that was a good T-shirt.
I thought that was very funny. He shows up in a homemade Tom Brady, drunk Tom Brady shirt.
And like, Brady even linked to the tweet and said, I'm never going to live this down. It was good.
Nope. No, and he's not, and for all the right reasons. So if he thinks he's going to have drunk Tom Brady on a Super Bowl boat kind of fun this year, great. I would love to see it because I, as local media, had zero fun watching him and that team last year.
Yeah, it was. It was a hard watch, hard listen.
Last year was a disaster from start to finish. Alex Cora has admitted in media sessions already down in Fort Myers that, you know, last year wasn't good. We all saw it. He evidently saw it as well from Puerto Rico where he was watching the games. The question is, how much of a bounce back can you expect?
We don't have a great team, but we have a good baseball team.
We'll see. We'll see. I agree with you on that first part. They're not great. Are they good? I don't know.
And can they pitch?
No.
Plain and simple.
I don't think so.
If they can pitch, to your point, Rich, they're going to hit. They're going to
score runs. They'll score enough runs. Now, I don't think they're going to lead the league in runs, but they're going to score enough. And it's just, it all comes down to the pitching. You're relying on a lot of guys who have injury histories or just simply aren't very good. Now, that's a tough combination to have.
How much does it matter that you actually have a closer this season? I mean, I know you got to actually have a lead.
Seems
to get,
helpful,
to get,
yeah.
To get
Helps.
It there, but step in the right direction, right?
Yeah. He's also not coming off a great year, but overall, I do like him. Talking about Ottavino, I like him a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he's what, 35, coming off a tough year? But I'll take my chances with him over anybody else you got.
And how much will it help overall, not just here, but baseball players in general, to be back in front of fans again? Even reduced capacity fans, just to have, you know, some energy in the ballpark, that sort of thing.
Well, it's great until it's not. You know, you're a starting
pitcher.
Until
they turn on you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're getting the hook in the third inning, and you're, like, tipping your cap, and they're booing you. It's some normalcy. I think they'll appreciate that overall. But losing teams, I don't think, missed the crowd all that much. I would say the winning teams did.
Yeah. I mean, didn't it matter, though? Like, I found myself, granted it was the championship of a COVID-shortened baseball season, but I found myself a little more jazzed up, if you will, a little more into it when I saw some fans at Globe Life last year when they had the offsite World Series with the Dodgers and the Rays. I thought that was actually like, oh, look, there's people there cheering. I told you guys how crazy it was to just walk up to Raymond James and see people cooking food and drinking beer and listening to music and getting ready to go, even though they only had 24,000 people in there, like, oh my God, it's okay to do this again, even in just a limited capacity. It makes I don't think we can discount what a big difference that's going to make, Dale.
The Knicks had fans last night for the first time. The Rangers, when they host the Bruins on Friday, will have fans for the first time. We don't have a definitive timeline as far as fans in Boston yet, do we? I haven't, you know, I've heard, well, we hear they're going to be,
March.
You know, reduced capacities in March.
But,
We don't know, okay, March 8th or whatever the date is, you know, you're going to be able to put people in the building, but it will certainly help.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I'm sort of sick of tarped off lower bowls.
It's not great.
And fake noise. And I mean, they did what they had to do. I don't blame them. You know, they had to do it that way. They did everything they could to make it as realistic as they could. I give them credit for creativity.
Oh, yeah, they tried.
I wouldn't mind seeing a few folks back in the building again.
That'd be nice. Be a beautiful thing.
Just a thought. 617-779-7937 is the telephone number. Occasionally, we drop in what we call a What If Wednesday. We've got that coming up, a What If. You know, I said earlier, you know, what if the South had won the war, that whole McKinley Cantor book. We've got another What If Wednesday for you. It's coming up in just a couple of minutes. It's Dale and Keefe with Fitzy. Shime's time to trend.
Now back to Dale and Keefe.
I'll let this cat out of the bag
on WEEI.
Play clock at 5. Pass is intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler. Unreal.
No, so now y'all playing radio. Got it.
Yes, we're playing radio. It's What If Wednesday. That was arguably the most famous play in Super Bowl history. Certainly the most famous play in Patriots history.
I say biggest play in NFL history. Dale, in one single play, forget about just superstars remade like Tom Brady legacies reborn like Bill Belichick's, Malcolm Butler, who the hell was he? You legitimately restarted a dynasty as you ended one in bloom. How can a single play, no matter how great the catch, improbable as it is, from Franco Harris's immaculate reception to David Tyree's helmet catch, even Edelman's catch in Super Bowl 51, you end one and restart one in but a single improbable play that never should have happened.
All right, so let's start with the basic premise. What if, because this is What If Wednesday, what if Pete Carroll had Russell Wilson turn around and hand the ball off to Marshawn? Is there any chance the Patriots stop him? I say no.
They were on the 1.5-yard line, and it took two people. It took two people. It took Akeem Ayers and Donta Hightower, who was injury-riddled at the time, little did we realize, to pull down the best goal line back, arguably, in NFL history from trying to win a Super Bowl. They had, by the time they threw the ball to Butler, I believe there were just under 30 seconds on the clock. So they probably could have pulled off not one, Dale, but two more running plays, or at least a running play and then a passing play.
Yep.
Had the Patriots been faced with another beast mode carry, I don't think it's possible that they would have stopped him. And I don't even think that was their best play. As long as they just didn't throw it to Lockett, had they done play action and Russell Wilson bootlegged, he probably could have run to the far corner of the end zone all by himself. And if Pete Carroll wanted to get him MVP, that would have been an easier way.
Yeah, he still would have got it.
He threw into traffic at downtown crossing as opposed to, you know, doing anything unexpected or at least so reliable like using Marshawn Lynch. I think they score there. And we, and as dead inside as I was at that moment, I like many Pats fans, probably would have cried. I think I would have cried because it took that Jermaine Kearse catch, one of the most improbable catches. Do you remember how you felt when the ball bounces off his hands, then off his knee
kicks
and body?
And, yeah.
Right?
And I thought, oh, God, another one of these has happened.
And Butler, filling in for Kyle Arrington at the time, played it perfectly. Went up for the ball at its apex, knocked it away from him. For some reason, inexplicably, Daron Harmon, who must have either thought the play was over or didn't want to get a penalty, probably thought the play was over, leapfrogs Kearse as he's trying to come back around on it. Had he just landed on him or swatted the ball away, Seattle would have still been 45 yards away at that time. So it took such an unbelievable turn of events to get them down there to that point in the first place. But I remember when he made that catch, I just said aloud, like I think millions of other Pats fans, like, it's happening again. A last-minute improbable catch is going to doom the Pats for a third straight Super Bowl.
So if you believe, as I do, that the beginning of the end of the Tom Brady-Bill Belichick-Patriots relationship, the beginning of the end was the Super Bowl that they lost because they didn't play Malcolm Butler. If you believe, as I do, that that was the beginning of the end, because that was like, are you kidding me? All you ever said was, all that matters is winning and losing, and you didn't give us the best chance to win because you didn't play this guy, especially in the aftermath of the play that was, that, you know, sealed the greatest play in NFL history, according to Fitzy. So the question is, do they even get to that point? If they lose this Super Bowl, if Russell Wilson hands it off or runs the naked boot into the corner of the end zone, does Brady depart earlier than he did?
Yes. I think at that point, Brady probably leaves after the 2016 season and Jimmy Garoppolo takes over. He ends up, let's say the Deflategate scandal takes place as it fully played out. Garoppolo's waiting in the wings. Now he's gone to and lost as many Super Bowls in a row as he had previously gone to and won. At that point, he's 3-3 in Super Bowls. Maybe he starts to buy into the idea that they're snake bit in Super Bowls and that he'll never be able to get back there and achieve what he did previously. Now, Malcolm Butler's not a star. Now there's disbelief in Bill Belichick's ability to be able to get over the hump because they keep getting there. Oh, the only reason why the Patriots were able to win. This validates every criticism from every hater who ever hopped on board the Pats Criticism Express, from the Rob Parkers to the Max Kellermans and beyond. The only reason why, you know, here's Marshall Faulk saying the same thing. The only reason why they won those first three Super Bowls is because they had tape, they cheated, and they got a competitive advantage because now they've been to three in a row and they're almost good enough, but they fall just short in the end.
See, the other question here is, was the relationship already fractured because of the Deflategate? Like, it is our feeling, our belief, that Tom was especially hurt by Robert Kraft accepting the punishment. Okay, we're done. You know, we're out. You know, we'll take it. That there was all that going on. So if you're right, if they lose the Super Bowl to Seattle, Tom walks at the end of the season, the Jimmy G era begins, you're sitting here with four Super Bowl championships right now instead of six.
If they
unless you believe Jimmy Garoppolo was going to win one in the aftermath of Tom's departure.
I don't think Jimmy Garoppolo goes to and wins Super Bowl 52 or 53 as the Patriots quarterback. I think they're consistently good, but so many different other sliding doors principles, so many other different little things happen along the way that changes history. Who knows if, you know, Malcolm Butler doesn't become a star, Tom Brady leaves after that. Who knows how many other people leave? And who knows how many Super Bowls the Seattle Seahawks could have gone on to win as well? They would have had two in a row. They could have easily gone to and potentially won another one, because you heard as much as I did about how they were rattled for years afterward. Cam Chancellor's piece a few weeks ago in the Players Tribune about how no person, let alone no unit like the Legion of Boom, legendary defense that they were, ever recovered from it. The team has just never been the same. They haven't gotten back to the Super Bowl. With all that talent, they couldn't barely get back to an NFC championship. Couldn't get back to a Super Bowl. They may have been a juggernaut in Bloomdale.
Jimmy Garoppolo would be the quarterback for the last 7 years for the Patriots.
I'd say for at least the last five. I would say Tom Brady sticks around, plays two more seasons, and then realizes that the handwriting is fully on the wall, even though his play has improved drastically. Maybe Brady goes out having won four Super Bowls at the end of 2016, and then he moves on to greener, organic, nightshade-free pastures somewhere else. Garoppolo takes over. He would be now entering his fifth year as the starter of the New England Patriots. Never as great as they were, consistently competitive, but not winners of six Super Bowls, having attended nine in the past two decades.
And we wouldn't have had the nightmare that was Cam Newton.
You would have been able to avoid the Cam.
It wouldn't have happened.
No. But what would all the headlines have been? Because history was immediately rewritten in just 5 seconds' time with one horrific play call that led Pete Carroll to spit out his gum, Tom Cable to throw his headset, and people to go dead on the inside all over. It gave birth to something I've talked about many times before, the YouTube reaction videos, of which there are thousands.
Oh, millions. They're everywhere.
Patriots fans taping themselves, losing their minds, and thank God they filmed. Sometimes I'll watch the Seahawks ones, but I mostly feel badly for them because they're all expecting to film themselves going off and going great, and then they just die on the inside when they watch that happen. What would the headlines have been? Because they became like Belichick, genius, Brady finally wins another one. The Patriots are back, and look what they did over the next 5 years. What would the headlines have been?
Oof. Now, we have a Twitter follower who, and I haven't checked Bert's numbers. I'm going to take Bert at his word when I read this tweet to you. Marshawn Lynch that season was 2 for 9 from the one-yard line, scored 2 touchdowns in 9 attempts. How's that the greatest short yardage running back of all time? He would have been stuffed just like the other times he ran it from that distance.
Well, he was considered the greatest short yardage running back in history, or at least the past decade, because he scored the most touchdowns.
But at that time, as the Twitter follower pointed out, that season, in that scenario, first, second, third goal, whatever it is, from the one, he was 2 for 9 running the football.
So that play call was too predictable, even though it would have been affected.
To your point, maybe the naked boot for Russell Wilson would have made more sense anyway.
You do play action to Marshawn Lynch, a little boot left, and then Russell Wilson. I always thought this would have been the smartest play. He's fast, even faster back then, 7 years ago. He can hit the pylon, probably would have walked into the end zone. Or you drag a tight end with you so that just when the defenders who are pursuing Russell Wilson come out, he drops one over the top into Luke Wilson's hands in the back of the end zone. Seahawks win. Patriots gutted like fish once again. I don't see how, because not only were the Patriots tired from having to just stop Marshawn Lynch the previous play.
Right.
But they did
stop him the previous play.
And they did, miraculously. But think about how emotionally frayed the Patriots... Like, if you're a Patriots defender, How are you able to call upon your training, think of the entire playbook, the 2 weeks that you prepared for this game, and remain calm knowing that you have this lead? Brady just orchestrated one of the best fourth quarter comebacks of all time. Now only to watch the Seahawks run a wheel route play that Jamie Collins blew, covering Marshawn Lynch in the left flat previously, and then the curse catch down the right sideline and be at the 1 yard line. I would have been so on edge. I don't know how they would have been able to stop him. I don't know how they could have made any sort of play in that situation.
Now the what if question that would probably haunt you the most. Do the Seahawks become the dynasty?
Of the 2000s? Of the 2010s? Yes.
Of that period. They become the dynasty, right?
I bet they end up winning three. I bet they become the team that wins three Super Bowls. Maybe they don't go back-to-back and go 14. Actually, they would have gone back-to-back.
Yeah.
They could have been going for a three-peat. It's only the Patriots of 03 and 04 that have gone back-to-back, and now this is what Tom Brady wants to do in Tampa Bay. Can you imagine, had they gone back-to-back and then going into 2015, still probably a slightly different team on a slightly altered NFC landscape, they would have been going for three in a row, which we just, good Lord, I mean, that's impossible. They would have had a chance to do it. Yes, I believe they win three Super Bowls that decade. The Patriots only win one more, and now we're out two duck boat parades. Tom Brady's legacy now in Tampa, if that's where he would have made his way to, who knows where he would have gone?
It wouldn't have been Tampa, probably. I mean, who knows where it would have been? Mm-hmm. Somewhere else. You know, he's good. The team would have been successful wherever he went. Maybe they don't win a Super Bowl like he did this year with Tampa, but they're good.
I know where he goes, Dale. I can play this out for you perfectly. He goes back home. Because remember at the end of 2016, they had started Gabbard a bunch. He gets hurt. Colin Kaepernick comes in, plays pretty well, but, you know, certainly not well enough to get a starting job after the controversies begin. 2017, Tom Brady makes his way back home as the starter for the San Francisco 49ers, probably plays 5 years there and is coming close to this would probably be the final season of his career in 2021.
Is he still considered the greatest quarterback who ever lived today?
No.
I don't think so. Nope. I don't think he passes Montana in that scenario. Unless things go incredibly well in San Francisco and they start winning titles again or that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. But it would have been like Tom Brady goes to 7 or 8 and wins 5, not goes to 10 and wins 7 and with two franchises. He's not only the greatest quarterback, he's probably the greatest team sport athlete of all time. Brady's legacy takes a massive hit in one play if Butler doesn't pick off that ball and Seattle runs any other play except the slant to Lockett.
And if Bill Belichick had played Butler in another Super Bowl, Tom's sitting with 8 right now.
See, I don't fall for that game nearly as much. And I, like everyone, disagrees that Jordan Richards or Johnson Badamosi, resembled better play calls defensively than putting Malcolm Butler in, as checked out as he may have been or as poorly as he may have played that season or in those particular playoffs. Because Brady is supposed to have won 49, or rather should have lost it, but he won it. So for every Super Bowl the Patriots should have won, there's one that they lost that they should have won as well. Do you know what I mean? Like, okay, so he should have won 46, because how the hell do you complete that pass to Manningham? Why doesn't Welker catch that ball? Maybe Gronk's ankle isn't as hurt, so he comes down with the Hail Mary in the end zone. Maybe Randy Moss, if we run the sim again, catches the ball on that 75-yard bomb from Brady and sets them up at the end and he scores. Or maybe Tyree never makes that catch again. Wasn't there a piece 2 weeks ago somebody said Tyree couldn't catch a cold in practice, dropped every single ball leading up to 42, and then he makes the most improbable catch ever? Never. No.
Trapping it against his helmet.
Yeah. No, I just Brady doesn't go down as the GOAT, but I still think they win the same amount of Super Bowls. But his legacy, massively impacted by that. Now we could be talking about Russell Wilson with three Super Bowls with 10 years to go trying to catch Tom Brady. How would you like to entertain that conversation?
Is Bill Belichick the greatest coach of all time?
Yeah. He holds his mantle. Oh yeah, but okay. In fairness, maybe he takes a knock like,
yep.
Okay, Bill, third Super Bowl in a row, Tom Brady. See, there's something that we would be kicking around in a good old barroom brawl, Dale. We would be arguing over, okay, three Super Bowls in a row, three in a row. Brady gives him the lead back with under 3 minutes, and Belichick blows it defensively again.
One play.
One single play. That's why I say this is, that's why it's not just the biggest play in Super Bowl history. It's the biggest play in NFL history. One play changed that many legacies and altered that many potential and or actual dynasties.
Coming up next on What Else You Got, a Massachusetts dad continued man's moral struggle against the GPS over the weekend in one of the most Boston pieces of sound you'll ever hear. It's Dale and Keefe with Fitzy, Sports Radio, WEEI.
Fitzy joins Dale and Keefe every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on WEEI.
By the way, Rich's technology did not fail today. He just had to leave a few minutes early today, so just so you know what's going on here. An opportunity for Fitzy and I to take you to a couple of stories that maybe we didn't get to earlier in the program.
What else you got?
I'll start out. Rex Chapman has made a prolific Twitter career out of retweeting videos that other people have originated. He got in some trouble early on because he wasn't as good about, you know, giving credit where those came from. He now does that all the time.
Yep.
He gives credit where credit is due. Today's edition, and I'll set the scene for you. There are two guys apparently in a pickup truck. And they have flagged down an attractive young lady driving her car along the road. And I don't know, I guess flashing lights or honking, whatever they're doing. She pulls over. She comes storming back to the car. And she is hot.
Leave me alone. Why do you keep following me? It's honestly so creepy. And I'm going to call the cops. Okay?
Ma'am, no.
Because you guys aren't leaving me alone. And that's why women can't go out in the world by themselves. Because of guys like you.
What?
Okay. So stop following me.
You have... I don't know if you have like a gas problem. You have a thing hanging out of your car.
What are you talking about?
There's literally a gas hose hanging out of your car. No one's being creeped. Oh. No, thank you. I guess.
Thank you.
There's the thank you. That's.
She storms back to the car, where she has the gas hose still attached in her car. She has ripped it off from the gas pump, driving down the road. They're trying to be good Samaritans. Hey, stop. She comes back storming at them. And then it's like, you got a gas hose hanging out of your car.
It's not just a little piece. It's actually the
whole hose.
It's the whole hose. It's like 8 feet of like whatever gauge that is, rubber piping that comes from. She literally finished filling up and then just took off. Didn't feel it. She was so preoccupied with whatever call she was
texting
on or whatever she was texting.
Whatever
she was
doing.
She didn't feel her car actually snap that off the gas pump and then drive down the highway with it for a good several minutes, accusing these guys of road stalking her.
When all
what else she got
was get her to take the damn gas hose out of her gas tank. All right, go ahead, Fitzy.
Chivalry will get you no anymore. Well, Dale, this is an all-time new favorite for me right here. The first time I watched it, I thought it was so spot on. It was so note perfect. It was so fantastic. I thought it was staged. I legitimately did.
I did,
any
too.
Of us.
When I saw it, I really did. I thought it was fake.
There was no way, because there are so many people that try to do accents and regionalisms and local comedy like this. It is absolutely perfect. Any of us who have ever traveled to the airport, warred with our parents over technology, had a problem with a mapping system, or a combination of all three, can relate to this, which I nominate officially now on Dale and Keefe as maybe the most Boston piece of audio in history.
South Bart, where are you? Oh my God.
What are you talking about?
You were supposed to take that exit to Boston right there.
You're on Logan Airport.
I know, but...
the hell are you talking
about?
Well,
that's
about?
What she said.
I don't listen to that shit. I'm going to Logan. I know how to get to Logan.
I know you know how to get to Logan, but it's telling you the fastest way to get there. Right now.
Well, shut her off.
Shut the f***ing thing off.
All right.
I had to listen to that going to New York when Billy was in college, and the thing was sending me all over the place.
I didn't have this one, Billy was in college.
No, we had that other thing, yeah.
This was getting us there in the fastest way. That's all it was doing.
That thing is bullshit.
No, it's not. If I miss my flight, I'm going to kick you in the face.
If you miss your flight, it's because you...
Because I was drunk.
Listen to me. It's 10 minutes to 1. If you miss your flight, you're not going to miss your flight.
I'm going to kick you in the face. At no point in my life, when my dad, God rest his soul, was alive, was I ever tempted to threaten to kick him in the face.
If you miss your flight, you're not gonna miss your flight.
You're not gonna.
If you miss your flight, you're not gonna miss your flight. God, that's so good.
By the way, that dude, when he says one of the words we have to bleep, he's like fumbling with a pack of cigarettes, pulling one out.
Of course he is.
Yeah.
If he wasn't, the only thing that could have made that better was if he was actually doing a scratchy against the steering wheel while driving. Did I ever tell you, Dale, my dad...
And sipping a Dunkies.
My dad was my hero for a million different reasons, but I thought his greatest achievement, the greatest feat he ever pulled off, was driving home from work on Cape Cod back to Braintree. And one time, I watched him drive us home. He was listening to the Red Sox on EEI, kid you not, while smoking a butt, reading the sports page against the steering wheel,
nice.
And polishing off a vanilla chocolate soft serve twist cone.
He'd have given that guy a run for his money. All right, tomorrow, and I'm not sure if this is going to work, to be honest with you, but they tell me I have to do it. Rich won't be here tomorrow, so I have both Hart and Fitzy on the show tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
You two kids, don't make me pull this car over and come back there. Just telling you.
If we miss our radio show, we won't miss our radio show.
Yeah, you won't. Jeff Goodman will join us at 11 tomorrow with more on what he's hearing about the Celtics superstars. OMF is coming up next, top of the hour. We'll see you all tomorrow. Bye.
Wee doggies.
That's all, folks.